Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are, I think, going to wrap up paper 39 tonight. We're on section 6 in paper 39, which is old single column, page 439. So we've got 239s. It must be time to finish up paper 39. All right, so you know, we've made it through all of those expanded sevenfold subgroup lists of the angelic groups. But we only have gone through five of the main groups, because the last two of the main angelic groups, the seraphic groups, are either not revealed in detail or are not revealed in this paper. So we have the transition managers and the seraphim of the future are the remaining two main groups, and we'll be expanding on all of the subgroups of the transition ministers when we get to forward a ways, as they'll mention themselves. You know, once we get to talking about the doings down within the local system itself, talking about our Marantia life there, they'll go through all the specifics. So, you know, there's a bit of placeholder to this, but we'll pull a little bit out that is right in juxtaposed in the context that we've been studying here, that, you know, will be well removed by the time we get way up to that subsequent paper. So let's see. I think that's about all we need, I think, for a lead-in. Let's just jump in here.
Number 6, transition ministers. As their name might suggest, seraphim of transitional ministry serve wherever they can contribute to creature transition from the material to the spiritual estate. These angels serve from the inhabited worlds to the system capitals. But those in Satania at present direct their greatest efforts toward the education of the surviving mortals on the seven mansion worlds. This ministry is diversified in accordance with the following seven orders of assignment. 1, seraphic evangels. 2, racial interpreters. 3, mind planners. 4, Marantia counselors. 5, technicians. 6, recorder teachers. 7, ministering reserves. More about these seraphic ministers to transitional ascenders you will learn in connection with the narratives dealing with the mansion worlds and the Marantia life.
So as I said, you know, they're pointing out right at the end. Remember, you get up to papers 47 and 48, and in that order, you're talking about the mansion worlds and then the Marantia life. And it's in paper 48 on the Marantia life that they expand on the transition ministers. Okay, just a few details to notice. So, you know, they tell you up front, you know, just in direct terms, rather than you having to fill in the blanks at all, I mean, why they call them transition ministers. And, you know, it starts out when they say the transition from the material to the spiritual estate. Well, that's going on, you know, from now all the way until you leave the local universe. However, you know, see what they say there, these angels serve from the inhabited worlds to the system capitals. So they are definitely, in place in this descending hierarchy of major angelic groups that we've been, you know, stepping down through here. Despite that rather sweeping indication there, they're really involved getting the process started. And, you know, you notice that there's going to be a lot of variability as they're reminding you of exactly where they focus their energies. It's going to depend on, you know, what's the nature of the mortals that are in that system. How advanced is that system? How primitive is that system? Et cetera, and all sorts of other details, I'm sure, that we can't even imagine, about where exactly they focus. But for us, they are very much focused. Their greatest efforts are on the seven mansion worlds. So, you know, that's fundamentally why they're, you know, putting the description of them up where they do. You know, as opposed to, you know, right in this context. All right. Now, you know, the rest looks, you know, pretty much just kind of boilerplate, straightforward. But let's notice a couple things. I mean, there's going to be a limit to how much of, we can see the pattern we've been looking for amongst the subgroups with just the names. But you might notice one thing that kind of jumps out at you relative to what we were talking about last time with the planetary helpers. If you flip back to the previous section, the planetary helpers, remember how we had subgroups 2, 3, and 4 that we basically talked about together, you know, as a you know, system of ministry. And subgroup 2 and subgroup 4 were the spirits of, you know, brotherhood and trust, as you recall. But subgroup 3 was the souls of peace. Remember, we expanded on that to understand why they were doing that, recognizing that fundamentally they're saying soul instead of spirit because they're down now directly in the higher mind. It is a spiritualized mind. It's the mind that can be copied and made soul. But it is in the mind, and it was about, remember, look at that very last line there in that subsection about the souls of peace, where they're reminding you about about philosophy. Remember about that personal living philosophy in that upper domain of the hourglass in that spiritualized mind. You know, and so that contrast where you're really talking about mind with 3 and spirit, you know, engaging downward into mind with 2 and 4. You know, look at, you know, what the name of subgroup 3 is for the transition ministers, mind planners. See, so you see how it's obviously lining up, you know, just by looking at the name. You know, so that's one of the things that, you know, actually can help you eventually to recognize what we did with those 3 subgroups, you know, and appreciating that it's mind and for one and spirit for the other two. All right, so that's, you know, and Marantia counselors seem to be invoking that teacher idea that we saw in subgroup 4 a number of times. And okay, now what about the 2, you know, basically givens that we saw every time, subgroups 5 and 6? Well, you can see 6, sure enough, it's, you know, it's been the recorders every time, and here it's recorder teachers. So that certainly seems still to be. So that's, you know, very definitively one of these vertical threads where those angels are not going to, you know, do the recorder thing for a while and then go sideways and do something totally different. They're just motivated. They start at the bottom and they work their way vertically, just purely vertically, up those ranks of recorders. And, you know, we saw a similar thing with subgroup 5, the transporters, you know, where you had this definite hierarchy. You know, but if you remember, if you flip all the way back to the first subgroup with the Supreme Seraphim, remember 5 was the directors of assignment. You know, it wasn't transporters. You know, so that was a little exception to that. Well, you know, it looks like you maybe have an exception down on the other end here too, to that having transporters in it. But actually, well, when we finally get to reading about those technicians, you know, they give you a whole description about why they call them technicians, how they're working with you on the technical aspects of coming to terms with the energy system that is your body and all the transitions it has to go through. But then it says, kind of as a footnote, and they serve as emergency transporters, you know, or space, transiting individuals. So they are one of the specialized type that the transporters are. You know, so that technician, as he's helping you, is going to be one of these friction shielded type angels that's going to be working with you. And as we read last time, especially when they gave you some of the details about loading the transport seraphim and all that, and we were commenting how amazingly mechanical it seemed to sound. It didn't seem like they were packing you in a being, but they were sticking you into some kind of fancy shuttlecraft thing with shuttle bay doors and whatnot, and adjusting them. And so it sounded very. Is that actually a person or is that a machine? Has a lot of machine-like character. And what are they? They're teaching you about the technical aspects of the energy. See, so it's very much in conformity with their nature. I'm sure the other ones could teach you things too, but they're very, very busy with all of the transporting. But down at this low end, you don't have, except for emergency situations, you know, they don't really have to do transporting, you know, 24/7, 365. So they can serve as those teachers of the technical aspects. Okay, so definitely, except, you know, it's only the highest group, the Supreme Seraphim, where you have that deficit in subgroup 5. They're all transporters. That special kind of energy. So again, you know, there's no horizontal movement. You know, they can't go off and be a soul of peace. Or something like that. They're a transport angel, and they just work vertically up the ranks. You know, so some of these high transporters were one-time technicians. All right, and of course 7 is the reserves, as it's been. But you notice, you know, how we saw the reserves always weren't just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. They were up to things, and they're ministering reserves is the title here. So that's, you know, you can see just from the title that's consistent too. Okay, so, you know, we know when we finally get there, we'll see a set of 7 that's not unlike the pattern that we've been going through here. All right, so that's just a tease. That's all we've got right here for the transition ministers. Get even a less specific tease now about the final group. What about the last group here?
7. Seraphim of the future. These angels do not minister extensively except in older realms and on the more advanced planets of Nevadon. Large numbers of them are held in reserve on the seraphic worlds near Salvington, where they are engaged in pursuits relevant to the sometime dawning of the age of light and life in Nevadon. These seraphim do function in connection with the ascendant mortal career, but minister almost exclusively to those mortals who survive by some one of the modified orders of ascension. Inasmuch as these angels are not now directly concerned with either Urantia or Urantians, it is deemed best to withhold the description of their fascinating activities.
Okay, so the mandate, revelation mandate is coming into play here. Okay, right. So, as I was just about to point out, the question on to my left there, we haven't gotten to whatever the heck the modified orders of ascension is. You know, if you're reading this book from you know, front cover to back, you know, what's that? Again, that's in discussed in the paper that immediately follows what the papers they were referring to in the previous section. That's in paper 49 when they talk about the inhabited worlds. Okay.
So it was in paper 42, right?
I mean, we're about to do paper 40, but that
some of the different.
Yeah, you get the various things about mortals there, you know. But if you flip up here, I can just tell you where it is here. You flip up to page. Let's see. So it's page 570 in the old single column, which is, like I said, I'm thinking right paper number. Yeah, paper 49, section 6, which is a long section. That section 6 is broken up into subsections, and you get to subsections 4 and 5, and they're talking about the secondary modified orders of ascension and the primary modified orders of ascension. Okay? So we'll get to all the details in the future, but let me just give you the thumbnail so that you know what they're alluding to in context here. You know, they have this very definitive statement, which initially kind of strikes you as curious. I mean, inasmuch as these angels are not now directly concerned with either Urantia or Urantians, like, wow, they're really emphasizing, you know, what's the deal there? Well, the modified orders of ascension are when you leave your initial world, your nativity sphere, you don't go to the mansion worlds. You know, you aren't resurrected on the first mansion world. You're resurrected somewhere above. For the secondary order, you're resurrected on the local system headquarters world, or you're resurrected on the subsatellites of the constellation headquarters, or if you're, you know, the most advanced of that type, you're resurrected on the constellation headquarters world. And you remember how when that happens, they go back as teachers to the, you know, this whatever span they skipped as a student. And if you're the primary order, you skip the whole works and you're resurrected on the headquarters world of your local universe. Okay. And so you've got the entire local universe, you know, vertical span that you go back through as a teacher, but you're resurrected, you know, off of your mortal world there, and you know, you are actually fusing on your mortal world. You don't have to be transported by a transport seraphim, you know, your soul doesn't, to the local universe headquarters. You know, you fuse with your adjuster, and the adjuster goes immediately there, and they build you a body, and the adjuster engages it. You know, so you've, you know, everyone that's doing that is fusing, you know, before. Yep.
Does the adjuster at all go back to? Does it go back to Ascendington at all?
Well, not when you obviously when you fuse with your adjuster. Yeah. Remember, once you've fused with your adjuster, that adjuster can't go to Divinington anymore. You know, that adjuster now has a home in Ascendington, you know, because that adjuster is part of you now. But for the other ones, I mean, there's, you know, it's still similar. I mean, you know, in most cases, you're still dying on your mortal world. It's just that your mortal world gave you a lot of the rudimentary experience that, you know, that's you should get on the mansion worlds, so you know you skip over that, but you're still, you know, your guardian angels are going to have to take possession of your soul, and they're going to have to hop a transport, and then they'll build a body and put the soul in it. You know, everything else is the same. It's just they're skipping even the formality of resurrecting you on the first mansion world and saying, no, not here, and then going to the second, no, not here. I mean, so they just skip all that formality and just take you directly to a higher foundation level. Yep.
Yeah, this is completely messed me in times past. Typically your soul is transported by an angel.
Right. I mean,
and it takes time.
Right, and it takes time.
But in this case,
it takes no time.
Your soul is actually carried by the adjuster.
Well, it's not carried, it's part of, you know, they're fused together, you know. And the adjuster, you know, can move itself, can translate itself. Yeah, I mean, Elijah, you know, when he fused his adjuster, no guardian angel had to transport his soul to the first mansion world. His soul got there glued to the adjuster. You know, but he was still resurrected on the first mansion world, and you know, et cetera.
Well, that completely baffles me because I thought I had some idea what the soul was. I realized I have no idea.
Right. This, you know, remember that soul is is a little energy system that whose spiritual fibers are very much like the adjuster's spirit substance, you know, and so the two just fuse together. That which is not yet like the adjuster is, still is going to have scaffolding underneath it, but not for the purposes of you know, going from the mortal world to the mansion worlds, you know, or wherever. Now the thing that that this is trying to get you to notice at a very relatively early stage, you know, we haven't gotten into a lot of details yet about inhabited worlds and whatnot. But they know you're starting to definitely think about it because you were just reading about that whole fancy transport thing and the six-winged, mythology we have of seraphim and all this sort of stuff, and you're getting kind of, really interested about how you fit into this. You know, we're not just talking about omniafim now and very abstract things. We're starting to talk about things more immediately related to us, and they know we're... So they throw in a little point of humility here, for those of us who are on Urantia, on this world. Okay, so if anyone had any delusions that, after you've read paper 49, it's like, well, I think I'm probably at least going to Adentia, if not the local universe headquarters when I die. Okay, inasmuch as these angels are not now directly concerned with either Urantia or Urantians, okay, no one, okay, is doing this. How far are we away from someone doing this? Okay, little reminder when you get to, they mentioned, you see, you notice how conveniently they've mentioned the Mansion World paper here, in the previous section, paper 47. You go there and you read about the mansion worlds one at a time. And they tell you for normal worlds, going to the mansion worlds, the relationship of normal worlds to the mansion worlds. That's what I meant to say. The relationship of normal worlds to the mansion worlds. They give you a little comparison of where you are developmentally as you're going from one mansion world to the next, compared to normal worlds going from one planetary mortal epoch to the next, okay? And the second mansion world is where you basically do things that are parallel to what a normal world does post-magisterial sun. The second mansion world is like the post-magisterial sun age, okay? The third mansion world is like the post-bestowal sun age. Fourth mansion world is like the post-Trinity teacher sun age. Fifth mansion world, now you're starting to talking about, early stages of enlightened life. Okay? Okay, we haven't had a magisterial sun. Okay? We Okay, so we're not in a post-magisterial Sun Age. We're not ready to do the things of the second mansion world. You know, and it's like, well, are you sure? Well, remember what they say about if you went to a normal post-Basol Sun world, in other words, if you went to the third mansion world and saw what they were up to in the third mansion world, you can't even imagine those doings right now. It's beyond your wildest idealistic flights of fancy.
But I've got my Ag and Dantor button.
Okay.
Well, technically, we're still a world, but it's different.
Right. See, it's different. You know, I mean, we're technically a post-Basol Sun world, but it's just technically. You know, we aren't, you know, in full reality. Michael couldn't really do any of the normal things that a Basol Sun does because he skipped over the magisterial Sun. That's why he has to come back. You know, he promised he'd come back because sometime he can do what a Basol Sun's supposed to do. Okay, so now what's going on the first mansion world? Well, everything from the most primitive, you know, even pre-planetary prince, you know, through the post-Adamic, you know, age on a normal world. Okay, we have a lot to do, all of us. I mean, none of us are even, you know, close to having the kind of mind that's possible if we had the full Adamic uplift, you know, and had the races blended. You know, we can't even remotely do what, you know, you need to do still in the first mansion world. Remember how they tell you, you know, when they're going through the epics, the planetary mortal epics, you know, that you're over a whole dispensation behind. I mean, because, you know, we have nothing of the magisterial Sun age, you know. We're all back there somewhere with some measure of post-Adamic, you know. You know, some of which we got directly from a little bit of Andite blood, and some of which we've, that which revelation failed to accomplish, evolution has achieved some. You know, we're starting to get going on the scientific age that normally Adam and Eve lead the people through and stuff like that. You know, but still, we're a long ways away from completing an Adamic, normal Adamic age.
Why are they envious? We start out the very bottom.
Right. So just, you know, pause to reflect on, see what this is forcing you to appreciate. You know, and you're normally fusing when you get to like the fifth mansion world, maybe sixth.
Really?
Okay. Which is so completely beyond anything you can imagine that it's not even funny. All right, so we all need to be very humble about these ideas of how transcendently psychic circle we are, and, you know, how we're going to skip over a whole bunch of mansion worlds. And
but when we get to the fifth,
right.
By the time we get there.
Because, you know, Don mentioned, you know, the Ag and Donner thing may, you know, may count for something. You know, we have had, even if it's mostly unconscious, you know, super conscious, we have had some benefit from the spirit of truth. You know, and so, you know, you can probably suspect that we at least have the potential to not be the total tail end of the bell curve, you know, going up through the mansion worlds. There's some potential to leverage off of the Basol Sun.
You don't just advance by time, you advance by progressing.
Yeah. Right. You don't just
get to the fifth mansion world until you get there.
Right. And you don't, not only do you not advance, you know, just simply temporally, you know, after so many minutes you leave the first mansion world, but you don't even advance in groups. You know, remember, up through the seventh mansion world, it's all individual. You know, you leave the seventh as a group. You know, so there's just this very manageable, proper-sized group that goes to Gerasim and then off Gerasim. All right, so anyway, see, that's what that's trying to get you to think about a little bit. Seraphim of the future, to think about your separation from the future, especially since we show a surprising willingness, as the revelators say, to imagine that we're really close to the future. Now we're quite far back, very humbly back, and we just need to take a deep breath and settle in for a long process here.
So I'm curious if you've ever read anything that indicates that we'll be toiling for our sustenance and our shelter as well as going to school in the mansion worlds.
No, I mean, you're not toiling anymore in the mansion worlds, you know, in the way we think of that word. You'll be challenged by what you're being taught, I'm sure, a lot of times, and, you know, you'll have to go without sleep, you know, before the final or something, I'm sure, a few times. But, you know, so there's that kind of intellectual toil, perhaps. But, you know, there's none of that, you know, very physically palpable toiling, you know, that we think, you know, we attach to that word toil.
Yeah, that's going to be great, because I'd rather be in school than work.
Yeah, remember they tell you that all seven mansion worlds will be... Yeah, remember they'll say, they tell you, and you get towards the end of that description of all the mansion worlds, they say all seven mansion worlds will be a delight.
Yeah.
Okay.
In comparison to this bleak world.
Yeah, it'll be a delight. But like we've talked about, don't go all, you know, fluffy cloud, you know, no toil, you know, no trial, no difficulty. Remember, there's especially that first mansion world, you know, that's where you're dealing with all those that are going to go spinning off, you know, into iniquity, post their, you know, nativity sphere. You know, that's going to quickly, you know, the wheat and the chaff are going to quickly separate on that world. And so you're going to be watching all kinds of people, you know, spinning off and slamming into the wall there. But
the word toil and all of our ideas associated. Yes, even on this world, we can. It's a state of mind.
Right.
We can get to a higher place where work is something we do enthusiastically, not something we do begrudgingly.
Right, and how do you do that here? It's the same way you do it there, the same process you have to go through there. Remember, the reason that you would begrudge the work is because you're still very animalistic in your consciousness. A human doesn't think like that.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, just remind yourself again, very humbly. Come on, be courageous. Be humble about this.
Can you know.
Hear what Gene said? Oh, I mean, Gene was just pointing out about the for those on the webinar that you know what you can maybe guess between the lines. But I was just saying that you can overcome that negativity of the word toil even in this life if you challenge yourself to have a consciousness at a higher level. Now, if you're down there in the dirt, you know, that you're having to work with your hands, you know, you're going to feel the inertia of that dirt. But, you know, your hands can be in the dirt and your mind can be transcended. You know? And so you can see the big picture of it. You can bring a positivity into the effort that your toes can't bring in. Okay?
As Jesus said,
yeah, right.
To the lady, you know, minister to the people we are serving as if we were doing it to God. So it's a different situation.
And that, you know, in terms of like you know, ministering to people as if you're doing it to God, you know, those various things like what Jesus said, you know, just the thing that the revelation is trying to do relative to what, you know, you can definitely pick up in Christianity along these lines is take it out of the realm of platitude. You know, take it out of the realm of just purely spiritual wishful thinking, where what you're trying to do is establish some sort of an escapist relationship to the physical effort.
High in the sky.
You know, where you're just going to somehow be blissing out and oblivious to it. You know, that's not a true phenomenon. The true way to not have it be that negativity of toil is to take delight in cultivating, having a cosmic consciousness. Because a cosmic consciousness faces the facts and adjusts them to ideals. And it achieves wisdom and, what was the name of that group? Souls of Peace.
Right, but when you do, and, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the revelation and yet they still have a lot of these problems that they would conceive of that concept of, well, I'd be a whole lot better off without, you know, in a morontial form than I am in a human form. Could you talk to that for 2 seconds?
Yeah, yeah, okay. So the idea of, you know, it's another thought of escaping. Should I think about escaping the problems that I may face genetically or whatnot you know, very definitive material problems that I may face in this life. Should I contemplate escaping that and starting up afresh on the first mansion world? Again, as we just pointed out, that is where we're going, the first mansion world, not the second. And the first mansion world is about those very issues. The challenge on the first mansion world is not, or how should I say this? The point of the first mansion world is not to escape those animal origin difficulties. It's to face them and triumph over them. So the truth of, like you told them that you pick up where you left off. Okay, you don't literally pick up where you left off in fact, but you do in truth, which means they're going to make the circumstance such that you have to effectively confront the challenge that you thought you had just escaped in your mortal life. You're resurrected, you're still mortal, you're mortal until you fuse. And you know, if you go back, you know, go and read the first mansion world, you know, they remind you, I mean, you're still essentially human. You know, the Morancha body you have is as close to matter as Morancha substance can be. You're a lot like that. Now, the thing about this, I mean, if the material issues are purely genetic, okay, there may be a fair degree of leaving that behind, okay, because the upper mind, the spiritualized mind that's been copied into soul, is by and large not going to be immediately affected by that. If it's just merely kind of a passive state of being a victim of your genetics. But if a lot of your problem is a result of decisions you've made, there's bound to be some at least shadow of that on the upper domains, you know. And so your soul is not going to be just that perfectly symmetric initial embryonic soul. It's going to reflect some of that poor decision making, you know, if there's been some measure of actual personal, you know, relation to it, so that it got copied into your soul. You can't say anything for certain, but you shouldn't think that beyond a shadow of a doubt I'm going to escape all that. You may find that you wake up with all of the essence of the problem that you failed in, the test you were failing here, the test is still going to be in play, and you need to still face that and choose wisely. Now you're going to have a lot more help there, and you won't have any, like I said, you won't have any sort of negative boat anchor of the material body, you know, that might be exacerbating this problem, you know. But see, that could be, you know, that could just clear the way so that there's no fog in front of the problem. The problem is just clearly in front of you then. And you know, if you listen intently to your teachers and helpers, they will show you the way to make lemonade out of those lemons. Okay, but it doesn't mean that you don't wake up without the lemons. Okay.
Yep. What benefits are there for keeping your boat anchor, mm-hmm. physical boat anchor here?
One of the benefits of that quote unquote boat anchor of your very material nature and hence mind is if it's relatively sound. You know, and your tendency to go astray is more something you're kind of doing above your immediate genetic level of your mind, you know, and you want to take the higher levels of your mind off on some false tangent. You know, it's going to be harder to do that because, you know, the lower mind that's well seated, you know, is going to resist that, you flying off on a tangent. So it can be very helpful. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work. I mean, we're supposed to have, you know, all of that effort of the Adam and Eve uplifting us and blending us and getting all of the bad genetics weeded out. So it's harder for you to go very far astray because you have this boat anchor that wants to stay, you know, well seated where it started. As I said, so you snip that off, and this life perforce you serve two masters, and in the next life you don't serve two masters, you serve only one, and that one is more fluid-like, less boat anchor-like, which is a positive. It's a double-edged sword. That means you could make progress on your initial issues a lot more efficiently, or you could, go to oblivion a lot more efficiently too. Either way.
Most of that boat anchor is just our fears that we can't deal with.
It's for those of you on the webinar. He's bringing up the idea that most of that boat anchor is our fears. Yes, obviously the foundational level of your mind is the level of fear, the zeroth level of meaning. There's an interesting relationship you have with that. Your job is not, when Jesus said, fear not, he doesn't mean snip off the zeroth level of meaning, so that there is no, lower domain of your mind. You need to take a hold of it and master it. And it's, if the mastery is coming from the top down, that's the furthest reach. That's going to be the final, effort to master that lowest level, and turn that fear into focus and make it a tool that you use. And see, so that's the fact that you can take that fear and turn it into a fully mastered positive phenomenon is a reminder that it's not all negative to begin with. We're given that fear and the boat anchor aspect of it, or you have a hard time getting away from it, because the human race would die off quickly without it. Primitive man needs that fear instinct in order to survive. It's the motivation to go from the nutrition epoch, the first developmental stage, to the security age, the second developmental stage. I mean, that fear is what powers you forward in your development, see, from the first stage to the second stage. So, again, it's, everything is as it should be to begin with.
The last time we talked about things that where coming here is something that they aspire to, because there's things that go on here that don't go on other places. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that aren't as clear and blatant too. Mm-hmm. Or that's the inevitability.
Right, you have those aspects of the inevitabilities. Why do visitors like to come here? I mean, a visitor can come here, and they have the opportunity to see a human in a very lowly estate, face a difficult challenge, and succeed, master it. They can't see that in very many places in the universe of universes. There's great sagas, epic poems that are written, of those like Amadon, right? So part of this, one of the things that Revelation is trying to get us to appreciate is to see if you can turn your relationship around to a difficult material life. Instead of the old-fashioned religious idea of seeking for some escape from it, and going to church because the pastor reminds you every Sunday about, the great escape that, will one day come. Can you take a hold of the higher gifts that you've been given that are founded on courage instead of fear? Your personal gifts are founded on courage. Your animal gifts are founded on fear. Can you take a hold of your genuinely personal gifts, founded on courage, you know, and take a hold of the situation, face it squarely, you do that because you take a long-term view with your personality. You have foresight, and you know that on the other side of effort, struggle, conflict, is faith, determination, love, loyalty, and finally that endpoint, progress. See, and that's fundamentally why you just don't escape a lot of these things by going to the first mansion world. The entire universe career from here to eternity is going through that 8-stage process that starts with effort, goes to struggle, conflict, you know, because that's the only way to get to progress. And if you're going to progress at all, to get from the first mansion world to the second world, you've got to go through that sequence over and over and over. Something has to come to a full conflict stage, and then you have to actually use your personal gifts, founded on courage, to go forward to get to progress. There isn't any measure of true progress, you know, in relative to your ascension scheme, you know, going from here to paradise, that isn't acquired by that technique. You don't go up one notch except by using your personal gifts, you know, and you can only use them in the face of genuine conflict. You can't use them if there's no conflict. That's what, without conflict, personality is not needed. Okay? There's all kinds of beings in the universe that don't have personality. They're not beings, they're just entities, you know, technically. It's because there's no conflict.
But there's a lot of people on.
They're just machines.
That don't go through the same. It's a different kind of conflict.
Right. I mean, again, you know, we have a tendency to do just like the apostles always did with Jesus. You know, and I, you know, when you hear conflict, you think bullets flying, and you know, you think very materialistically, because that's basically all we can do. You know, we're destined for the first mansion world after all. It's hard for us to do anything except think materially about things like that. You know, the challenge is to recognize, yeah, the conflict starts out very dirt-like, you know, very matter-like, but when you go up, the conflict doesn't go away. It's just higher and higher level, you know, until you finally have full-on spirit conflict. You know, not just mere material conflict or mindal conflict, but some solid, real conflict.
Challenging.
Spirit conflict. You know, those people that are listening to Lucifer, you know, and Gabriel, the two camps, you know, that's not a material or, you know, they're facing some definitive spirit conflict. They're up against true and false liberty, and liberty is a spirit word. Okay, they're being tested. You know, I mean, every one of us gets to paradise by being tested and passing the test. If you fail the test, you don't progress, and if you completely fail tests, you cease to exist. You know, that's the universe. You know, there is no path of bliss to paradise. There's only a path of choice. You discover a conflict. You recognize the conflict. You interpret the conflict, and then you choose to overcome the conflict. That's our universe career.
However,
right?
It is still a fear not, because it's all a matter of what you just said. You may not achieve, but if you choose, you know, and if you're sincere, you have an infinite mercy to achieve.
Right. You have infinite mercy to achieve all of these difficult things.
As long as you're sincere.
It's
not something you have to fear or you have to be worried.
Yeah, just try to find that part of you that doesn't want to avoid, that can be courageous to some degree. Try to find that and try to use it a little bit. You don't have to totally overcome all of the difficulties of this life, but try a little bit. Don't just check out. Give it a try, because if there are real conflicts, you're going to wake up with, in front of, you know, with them in front of you. If they're not real, okay, you won't wake up on the first management level, but if they're real conflicts, why not get started on it now to the best of your abilities? Try to find some of that God-nucleated nature that you have, that personal you, that can be a little bit courageous and can choose instead of deciding to fail. Choose to succeed. And then see if decisions can follow that, that lead to progress. But you're never going to have any decisions that lead to progress if you haven't first chosen to succeed. Setting your eyes beyond the difficulty. I want to be over there, not standing in this muck where I am right now. Okay? And no animal can see over there. Your animal mind gets fixated on the muck and despairs and collapses. You've got to have insight to see through the muck to the vista beyond. All right, and so there we are. The vista beyond, the next section is seraphic destiny. What is that destiny point that they, as a person, are looking towards? Let's see what they say here.
Number 8, seraphic destiny. Seraphim are of origin in the local universes, and in these very realms of their nativity, some achieve service destiny. With the help and counsel of the senior archangels, some seraphim may be elevated to the exalted duties of brilliant evening stars, while others attain the status and service of the unrevealed coordinates of the evening stars. Still other adventurers in local universe destiny may be attempted, but Seraphington ever remains the eternal goal of all angels. Seraphington is the angelic threshold to paradise and deity attainment, the transition sphere from the ministry of time to the exalted service of eternity.
Okay, so two things. Let's just note the little aside there, the passing thing. There they are again. Remember how many times they refer to the unrevealed assistance of the bright morning star, Gabriel in our case. Here they are again. And they've given you one little tidbit about them. They're a group of beings that seraphim can achieve by, you know, this attainment process, just like brilliant evening stars. So that's interesting. So it's not just a purely created as such group, those unrevealed coordinates of the evening stars, you know, and just that fact that they are some way a coordinate of the evening stars. That's a clue too, you know. And they're not just, well, then there's those other ones. There's some sort of a duality, some sort of a pairing here. So maybe the more you reflected on the evening stars, maybe more you could see. Wait a minute, there's a part missing. You know, you start to draw, get the outline of the evening stars drawn, and it's like, wait a minute, this looks like a half a circle, not a full circle. Seems like half the picture is missing here. You know, and you, oh, that must be the unrevealed ones. That's, see how they seem to be just trying to give you a hint here. Anyway, so, you know, so both of those groups, revealed and unrevealed, the seraphim can get into. They have all these different service destinies, paths, service destiny paths within the local universe. But what's that light at the end of the tunnel that they're all looking towards? Seraphington. Okay, that's the far off vista, you know, that haunts their dreams, you know, their delighted dreams, you know, that. I'm trying to imagine what it must be like. I ask everyone, it's like, explain it to me, you know, describe it to me again, and it's like, you know, I just can't quite taste it yet. I wish I could get there. Right? They're all striving for that point, because that's their means to eternity. The only way a seraphim, who's very definitively of time, can get to eternity is through that doorway. The process that occurs on Seraphington is the only way. You know, it's, you know, it's a nexus point. There's all kinds of different paths. They all lead to seraphing and then fan out from there again into a diversity of paths. Not unlike what we do. We have all these different starting points, but we all feed through Salvington, our Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit, and then we fan out again. That whole bit, the only way, you know, for eternity is through our Son, through our Creator Son. So it's Seraphington and the mysterious process is there. That's their destiny point. All right. Well, let's see what kind of clues they're going to give us about what they do to try to get to that sort of, you know, in the same way that we're trying to get to our first sort of really high benchmark of getting to paradise, becoming a finaliter. They're trying to get to Seraphington. You know, really paradise stuff that they might do is sort of after that. You know, it's sort of the second half of their career. Like being a finaliter is the second half of our career. Okay, so they're trying to get to Seraphington.
Seraphim may attain paradise in scores, hundreds of ways. But the most important, as elaborated in these narratives, are the following.
Okay, so, they do point out, it's not like they have no desire for paradise. Okay, they just know that the only way to get to paradise is, you know, once they get to Seraphington, okay, now I'm going to get to paradise. Okay, you know, so it's kind of like getting to paradise for them is kind of like becoming a finaliter to us, and like, well, before I can become a finaliter, I have to get to paradise. You know, and but for them, it's the real significant point is Seraphington. Okay, and then the one little kind of curious thing there, they go, they may attain paradise in scores, and then parenthetically, hundreds of ways. Well, why didn't they just say hundreds in the first place? Why did they say scores and then modify it to hundreds? Think about it. It's a way of giving you a little sense of, if they just said hundreds, it's like, well, like 900? No, on the smaller side of hundreds. You know, where you're trying to decide, well, should I describe it as scores or should I describe it as, you know, a few hundred? Right, so that's just, so it's, there's some few hundreds of ways. All right, and they're going to give us kind of three general categories here.
Number one, to gain admission to the paradise seraphic abode in a personal capacity by achieving perfection of specialized service as a celestial artisan, a technical advisor, or a celestial recorder. To become a paradise companion and, having thus attained the center of all things, perhaps then to become an eternal minister and advisor to the seraphic orders and others.
Okay, so it's been a while. Can you remember, they're invoking these terms that you may recognize, technical advisor, celestial recorder, paradise companion. You know, that was a while back. Remember when we talked about the messenger hosts of space? Okay, so there's some of the categories in that paper about the messenger hosts of space. And we haven't talked about the celestial artisans yet. That, you know, we get to that up in those papers we keep alluding to here. But technical advisor, okay, if you recall, that was about applied law. You know, that they were like the living law libraries. You remember when we read about them? Okay, so if you remember back to that, it's like, well, wait a minute. We have that subcategory here, pattern, you know, we saw where, you know, we had justice guys and law forecasters, etc. And remember how we noticed they even pointed out to us that subcategory number two that was related to mercy and justice in various ways, you know, law and love in various ways, was one of those subgroups that had a degree of very definitive vertical movement in it. Oh, so you're very suspicious here that, yeah, so some of them probably can move up through those ranks of the seraphim and keep on going up and become a technical advisor. So basically to move up out of the local universe regime up into the super universe regime in that mode of functioning. See, so one of the ways that they can become an evolutionary seraphim and, you know, really be moving upward, is to be in one of these groups that is very, very much vertically oriented, moving up through the different major groups of seraphim and penetrating through the top and keeping going. You know, and once you're, you know, very well perfected up at that super universe level, you know, they're saying that there is a pathway that'll get you to paradise, you know, kind of naturally.
Seraphington.
Okay? Yes, to Seraphington and then to paradise. Well, same thing, you know, with it, we saw it was very definitive with recorders that you had this vertical thread going up. See, so same thing. You go up through all the local universe recorders and you finally get up into the super universe level with the celestial recorders and, you know, and have a gateway to paradise. Yes. No, they don't go through the Havona worlds. They go directly from Uversa, in our case, to Seraphington. Yep. Okay, and then the other one, you remember the Paradise Companions. A Seraphim can get called up to be a Paradise Companion. And they mentioned that, you know, a lot of them, once they're done with that very long stint, they said, but it's a temporary stint. Not an eternal job. A lot of them go back to their local universe duties and pick up where they left off. But they mentioned that, you know, that wasn't always the case. And see, they're kind of alluding to that here. See, perhaps then to become an eternal minister and advisor. So instead of going back to being a minister, you know, time minister, you know, they could take a path and really, you know, stay up there and work at that level. Okay, so the item number one here is, you know, various ways that they sort of, just as seraphim, they can have a vertical element, either by kind of by nature or by choice from on high. You know, they can be given a vertical component to their existence and get up there. Okay, what about number two?
Two, to be summoned to Seraphington. Under certain conditions, seraphim are commanded on high. In other circumstances, angels sometimes achieve paradise in a much shorter time than mortals. But no matter how fitted any seraphic pair may be, they cannot initiate departure for Seraphington or elsewhere. None but successful destiny guardians can be sure of proceeding to paradise by a progressive path of evolutionary ascent. All others must patiently await the arrival of the paradise messengers of the tertiary supernifum, who come with the summons commanding them to appear on high.
Okay, so two things. This group, you see, is a little bit similar to the first one. Again, they're there's some sort of a, you know, a fiat, sort of a summons here to appear on high. You know that, okay, you're going to do the vertical thing. And you see, in this case, rather than it being part of an extension of a process that started down low, like going up through all the recorders, you know, and it just keeps projecting upward, this is, you know, you're down there working in the local universe, you know, with no real kind of hint that you're moving upward, but someone who sees the really big picture points the finger at you and you're called up to Seraphington. You know, see, you notice it's not called up to paradise, you know, it's called up to Seraphington. So, you know, you're just, you know, do not pass go, you know, you're just going straight to that destiny point. And you know, and that other thing that they said there, so, you know, under certain conditions, the seraphim are commanded on high. So just, but then they have this other thing that's kind of mysterious. In other circumstances, angels sometimes achieve paradise in a much shorter time than mortals. We're going to get to that here shortly, what they're alluding to there. But it's basically just, you're kind of on a beeline path here to Seraphington, and then we'll figure out what after that, as opposed to, in a way, you're on a beeline path towards paradise and you go through Seraphington because you're just on a very ascending mode, those previous ones we read.
First, my memory, okay. Are seraphim Do they get their personality from the infinite spirit or from God?
They're first source personalities.
They're first source.
Even though they're, you know, offspring purely of the creative mother spirit, they're first source, not third source personalities. The other little tidbit in there, we've kind of been wondering about a little bit. They've just tossed us a clue. But no matter how fitted any seraphic pair may be, they cannot initiate departure for Seraphington or elsewhere. So, you know, we've been wondering about this. Are they definitively plugged into the Creative Mother Spirit's mind, you know, from birth, from their creation point, and hence can't go outside of the boundaries of Nebadon because their mind had come unplugged? You know, see, they can't initiate departure. They've got to be modified before they can go. So that's, but you know, we have seen that it's quite common that they are modified to go outside of their local universe. But it is pointing out that they are technically initially just confined. They can't initiate departure, you know, any more than we could if we jumped in, like we said, if you jumped in the Starship Enterprise and, you know, headed for the boundary of the local universe, everything would be fine until you cross the boundary, and then every crew member would go unconscious. You'd come mindily unplugged. Right. All right, so that's, you know, that seems pretty solid there. That at least in, you know, in a very as they are created mode, they're confined to the local universe. All right. Then the third one is sort of the one that's more immediately, you know, that we think of when we think about an evolutionary seraphim, an ascending seraphim, something that's parallel to us. Okay.
Number three, to attain paradise by the evolutionary mortal technique, the supreme choice of a seraphim in the career of time is the post of guardian angel in order that they may attain the career of finality and be qualified for assignment to the eternal spheres of seraphic service. Such personal guides of the children of time are called guardians of destiny, signifying that they guard mortal creatures in the path of divine destiny, and that in so doing, they are determining their own high destiny.
Okay, so putting themselves in parallel to an ascending mortal, you know, basically locking on to your definitive vertical movement because you have locked on to the adjuster, a spirit fragment, and spirit gravity is pulling it up. So you're going up with it, especially once you fuse. And they've locked onto you, and so they're going up with you. You know, so everyone is riding the adjuster elevator. Okay. You know, remember a lot of the details about guardian angels is, you know, way up there, in part towards the end of part three. But one of the technical details that they slipped in here, you know, they said guardian angel to start with, and then they said guardians of destiny. Remember the technical differences. They're not technically a guardian of destiny until you are a third circler or equivalent, and you know they're attached. You know, just one pair. You know, two angels to one person. You know, not the angels that are ministering to a group of mortals that are just guardian angels, the guardians of destiny. See, so it's once, you know, they're called guardians of destiny, see, like they're saying, not just because they guard mortal creatures in the path of divine destiny, but also, in so doing, they're determining their own destiny. Okay, so, you know, this is a spot where they give you kind of this a little addition about how to appreciate, you know, why that term, guardians of destiny. The guardian part kind of really fixates on you, but it's not all about you. You know, there's just as much with them and getting to their destiny via that, the initial verticality of the adjuster. because they don't have an adjuster. They may not even have a father fragment even way on high. So that adjuster, is really the key. That they're just following it up.
Yep. Which concomitantly is that as we succeed, so they do. In other words, so it's, in a way, there's a beauty in that.
Yeah, right. It's a very complementary, coordinate relationship between us. We need them and they need us. Neither of us are going to get there without the other. What you're really doing is the two of us are standing side by side and we're both looking up to the adjuster. It's the link that binds us together and allows us to go up. Yep.
A little confusing. The Guardian of Destiny, we get when we become Third Circler, a pair. There are too many of us who are going to get Third Circling on this planet. When we achieve the mansion worlds and get to the third, fourth, or fifth, will we at that point call our former Guardian of Destiny from the thousand that he's sitting on or she's sitting on now?
No. I mean, the way it works, nothing changes. I mean, the mansion worlds. For those of you on the webinar, he's just wondering about this whole issue of how does this work with, your Guardians of Destiny on the Mansion Worlds. Nothing changes in this whole process. You start out here in a group, and you continue there in groups. Eventually you're going to get to a Third Circler somewhere, in the Mansion Worlds. And then you'll have your own pair. But, on the first Mansion World, you've got all of these resurrected mortals that are being ministered by seraphim in groups. That whole process just that's a lot about you pick up where you left off. See, that's an example where it's very literal. That ministry picks up exactly where it left off. If you died in a group of a thousand, you'll wake up in a group of a thousand. With a pair of seraphim. Okay. Because again, they're ministering to your mind, and it's your mind that's picking up where it left off, even though your body is not picking up exactly where it left off. But as close as the body can be to where it left off, it will be. I mean, as I remind you, that Marantia form is very material like. I mean, it has to be. If it wasn't. Really close to, or very, it wasn't very close to the material body you left behind, the mind couldn't be similar. I mean, because the mind is attuned to the body.
Mary would have never recognized Jesus.
Okay. All right, so, you got something else?
Just quickly, I mean, it doesn't mean because you die old that you resurrect old.
Right, of course. Right.
So,
right, again,
you're to say that you've got still all of
it. Right, see, again, and that's because, we've all been trained to think that the self that's thinking right now is resurrected, and that self is young, and then it's middle-aged, and then it's old. No, that self that goes through that process is not resurrected.
No,
the Marantia self is resurrected, right? And it's very much young. That Marantia self, where is it in a parallel process? It's actually still just an unfertilized egg. Remember, the conception point is fusion. It's that unfertilized egg, from a spiritual sense, that's being resurrected. So you wake up on the first mansion where it still is a developing egg, long time before conception in the spiritual sense. So still very rudimentary. I don't think there was anything else there, was there? Keep reading here.
The Guardians of Destiny are drawn from the ranks of the more experienced angelic personalities of all orders of seraphim who have qualified for this service. All surviving mortals of Adjuster Fusion Destiny have temporary guardians assigned. and these associates may become permanently attached when mortal survivors attain the requisite and intellectual and spiritual development. Before mortal ascenders leave the mansion worlds, they all have permanent seraphic associates. This group of ministering spirits is discussed in connection with the Urantia narratives.
All right, so the Revelators just reminded you again that if you take the light in cultivating patience, they will answer your question a lot of times in the next paragraph. Just in case you missed that.
Again, I get the big finger.
Remember to, you know, and it's important. I mean, and the reason I'm stressing it is not just to, you know, just to poke a finger. There's a technique for developing a relationship with the revelation, and it doesn't involve hyperventilation. You need to slow it down. You need to let yourself just be present with what's in front of you at the moment, and not saying, well, yeah, but what about all the other things I can think of? Because if you're thinking about all the other things that aren't in that paragraph, you won't acquire anything from that paragraph, and you'll have to go back to it again. I mean, you're never going to make any progress. You have to allow yourself to just have lots of question marks. Remember how they've reminded us of that part of the whole process of ascending is developing the ability to be comfortable with question marks surrounding you. I got to dot every I and I got to cross every T. Yeah, your animal mind is wanting to do that, and your animal mind can't relate to the revelation. You have to tell it, just calm down, just be present with this material. Try to see this material, and then you know, go forward. Now, how did we? You know, where was that? We were just can't remember where that was. We were just looking on that. Oh yeah. In the more advanced planetary ages, these seraphim enhance man's appreciation of the truth that uncertainty is the secret of contented continuity. So you're trying to develop a contented continuity with the revelation, because that's where the truth is. You know, it's separate from the facts. And so the facts are important, you know, and you often have a lot of these factual questions, but you have to temper it. You can't answer all the factual questions all the time, or you're going to be too defocused to pick up on that subtle truth that you're trying to strike step with. Okay.
So I have to have patience?
Yep. So patience. It's so important to develop patience. Okay. Now, and so you see that they talk about all surviving mortals of a juster fusion destiny have temporary guardians assigned, you know, and then you get permanent ones attached. That, like you're saying, that normal process, you know, occurs there. But you could misinterpret this. It's like, well, wait a minute. Are they saying that spirit fusers don't go through that normal angelic process? No, they're not. Spirit fusers and sun fusers have the same angelic ministry as adjuster fusers. Remember, this is it's a contextual statement. They're just talking about the adjuster fusers because those are the ones that go all the way to paradise. We're trying to get seraphim to paradise, not just to Salvington or to Uversa. Okay. All right, so don't misinterpret that. And this attain the requisite intellectual and spiritual developments. You were talking about third circular or the equivalent. And they gave you a fun little tidbit there. Maybe this person is going to discover to be a spirit fuser when they get to Salvington, you know, one of these ascenders. You know, so they go all the way to Salvington and haven't fused yet. You know, but you could have the question, it's like, well, how far can a third circler, you know, how far can you go and not be a third circler yet? Yeah, see, they just gave the answer here. Before mortal ascenders leave the mansion worlds, they all have permanent seraphic associates. So everyone on the local system headquarters world is a third circler or beyond. Okay, so that gives you a little sense too. See, if even the stragglers in the bell curve, get to Third Circular, you know, through the mansion worlds. But that also reminds you that you could go a long ways. You see, that would be the equivalent of going through post-bestowal, post-Trinity teachers on, light and life, deep into light and life, and still, remember what they say, that you get a normal world of light and life, and there's still, that now we're starting to see really significant numbers of Third Circlers. You know, and they're 500 years old, and they have, all of that incredible culture and everything. All right, see how it lines up. You aren't definitively everyone's got their own seraphic guardians until you're well into light and life, until you're off the mansion worlds. That's the real threshold point. So it's, again, very humbling. You think, I'm pretty sure I'm a second circler. It's like, are you really?
Six and a quarter.
Yep,
yep. Okay, so all the Caligasti 100, they were not familiar with their adjusters.
Right. But they were third circler or greater, see?
But they were on Jerusalem, and they didn't fuse.
Yeah, right. So they were some of those that were, either going to fuse there or somewhere up in the constellation or something. Maybe one of those was going to end up being a sun-fused mortal. You never know. Maybe that's why they hadn't fused on Gerasim yet. Maybe they would have gone all the way to Salvington and not fused. We don't know. They're like that. But you at least know that they were third circular. So that just adds to it. It's like, wow, nod. You're a third circular or better, and you still were that clueless?
This is confusing me too, because there's a section in the Psychic Circle paper, or the section, that talks about many Urantians are achieving their circles.
Seven and six.
No, it says all their circles.
There are those that are first circlers here, right? I'm not saying that there's no one here, that's a third circler, a second circler, or a first circler, but we're just trying to kind of, if nothing else, kind of think of it statistically. Maybe you could say, it's a bell curve thing, and there's always a leading edge of a bell curve. So no matter how many of us are, a long ways away from being first circlers, there's always going to be some. And if you've got billions of people on the planet, even if it's a low percentage, there's going to be, many. You can say many. But by many, don't think 99%. Don't think percentage-wise. Think number-wise. And so you have to, you have to balance between whether or not they're talking about percentages or just direct numbers. That's the difference in what you see in different places in the book. You got some?
The first sentence here kind of interesting to me, that they're, they're not virgin, they're chosen from the ranks of experienced angels, going along with the part three here, where this is their way to get to paradise, so
right,
to speak.
Right.
And that are qualified for this particular service. So,
yep, right. Okay, so for those of you in the webinar, he's bringing up this contrast. It seems, he's saying he's noticing that unlike you might have a version adjuster if you're a primitive mortal, it appears you're always going to have one of the more experienced angels being, your guardian angel, especially if it's goes all the way to guardian of destiny, and that's because, it's the adjuster and your ascending self are trying to become one self. And then there's the rest of the story, the coordinate part of the picture. And initially, that coordinate half, the angelic ministry that's engaging you, needs to be above you and giving you a help up. So the process starts by them reaching down and helping to pull you up. And then you swing around, and you'll try to, you'll pull them up some, and then it'll swing around. So you're going to work in that coordinate fashion. But it starts out with them above you, You know, and you're reaching up and they're reaching down and they're giving you a helping hand up to start with. So they can't be at eye level like the adjuster. But the adjuster is supposed to, you know, in terms of what's engaging you, I mean, obviously it goes all the way to infinity, so that's never going to be at eye level. But you know, in terms of the part that engages you, it's supposed to be right at eye level. Because, you know, it's right there with you. But the angel is, you know, initially needs to be above that. It needs to be above the part of the adjuster that's engaging you, even. See? Okay. All right. Oh, yeah. I just wanted to mention to you that bit about the personalities of all orders of seraphim who have qualified for this service. Recorders are not going to be doing this. They're on the recorder track. You know, transporters are not going to be doing this. They're on the, you know, going up to the transporter. See, so, you know, part of that qualification is you're not qualified if you're a transport angel. Okay, so some of that is a very, you know, coarse qualification. You know, but amongst the ones that potentially could be, then there's some sort of a, it's more of a quality than a quantity sort of qualification then. You know, some sort of threshold of experience. Okay. But no amount of experience as a transporter gives you what you need to be a guardian of destiny. All right. Let's see. I think that was it there, wasn't it? But just that, you know, there's spots, you know, like this where it's the only place in the book that you can get this question answered if you're wondering about. It's like, well, you know, what circlers were all the prince's staff? You know, the reason that some of them failed because there were six circlers? It's like, no. You know, it's a real failure. I mean, they had achieved the level that Jesus was going around the Mediterranean. They could function at that profound level, or they could have done what Jesus did in all those vignettes. And they still went to iniquity. Right? See, so, you know, there are paths to iniquity everywhere short of fusion. Yep.
William has a question. Are all members of the Cosmic Reserve Corps first circlers?
We have no idea what about the Cosmic Reservists. We know that Destiny Reservists are an exception to the third circler rule. I mean, they get their own pair of seraphim. Yeah, there's three ways. You can be a third circler, you can make the supreme decision, or you can be a reservist, and that gets you your own pair of seraphim. But the cosmic reservists, I mean, they just don't tell us anything. We don't really know what. So you can speculate, you know, endlessly about you know, where they are. But, all right.
John, your reserves, what do you think? No, that's the military reserves.
Oh, okay. So we've been talking so long. So it is not possible.
It is not possible for angels to attain God from the human level of origin, for they are created a little higher than you. But it has been wisely arranged that, while they cannot possibly start up from the very bottom, the spiritual lowlands of mortal existence. From the lowlands of mortal existence. Mm-hmm. They may go down to those who do start from the bottom and pilot such creatures step by step, world by world, to the portals of Avona. When mortal ascenders leave Uversa to begin the circles of Avona, those guardians of attachment subsequent to the life in the flesh will bid their pilgrim associates a temporary farewell while they journey to Seraphington, the angelic destination of the grand universe. Here will these guardians attempt and undoubtedly achieve the seven circles of seraphic light.
Okay, so this is straightforward, just quickly. So notice that whole bit about how they need to start above you because they are going to pilot such creatures, okay? And then you notice that there is some equivalent seven-step process on Seraphington. You were asking about, do they go through the seven circles of Favona? You know, and they see they don't have to. They might, but they don't have to, because their seven-step process coming into relationship with the Paradise Trinity is on Seraphington. And see, whatever that seven-step process is, they use the circle analogy again, just like psychic circles. You know, they just call them circles because to analogize them to the Havona circuits. So they're doing the same thing here, evoking that analogy. Okay, so that's, see, like I said, that's their real, you know, you're trying to get to this seven, to the central universe so you can do that seven-step process to synchronize with the Paradise Trinity. They're trying to get the Seraphim to do a, some parallel seven-step process to synchronize with the Paradise Trinity. Okay.
Many, but not all, of those Seraphim assigned as destiny guardians during the material life accompany their mortal associates through the Havona circles. And certain other seraphim pass through the circuits of the central universe in a way that is wholly different from the mortal ascent. But irrespective of the route of ascent, all evolutionary seraphim traverse Seraphington, and the majority pass through this experience instead of the Havona circuits.
Okay, so there's a lot, you know, crammed into that little paragraph there. Okay, so one step at a time. So and you've got the Destiny Guardians. Many of them are going to follow you through the Havona circuits. So they go through Seraphington, and then they follow you through, through Havona.
Meaning yours goes with you, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So, So your pair of Destiny Guardians, you know, go to Seraphington, do their thing there, and then, you know, pick up with you on the seventh circuit of Havona.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Go to Seraphington first,
and then go with you to the seventh circuit. Okay, and then they say that, and certain other seraphim pass through the circuits of the central universe in a way that is wholly different from the mortal ascent. So not the Destiny Guardian thing. Yeah, but you've got some of them that get to Seraphington, and subsequent to that, they go through Havona for some other reason, you know, besides following an ascender. Okay, and that's what they were referring to here. In other circumstances, angels sometimes achieve paradise in a much shorter time than mortals. Remember, they're back in item number 2. I told you we were going to get to that. So that's what they were referring to there. You know, there's a zillion. Remember, they said there's hundreds of different, you know, paths. Okay, so one of them gets takes them to Seraphington and then through Havona, but they're not following an ascender. All right, and then but all those different hundreds of ways, but irrespective of the route of ascent, all evolutionary seraphim traverse Seraphington. See, there's where it says it directly, like I've been saying over and over. That's the nexus point. They all go there and then do whatever.
Really? Okay. So let's say, you know, you're on the shores of Havona, of Uversa, and you're getting ready to, and seraphim to go to Havona, a long trip through the dark gravity bodies, whatever. Mm-hmm. They have to in seraphim too.
Yeah.
Right? And you're saying you go to the seventh, you know, the pilot world, the seventh.
Seventh circuit.
And they go to Seraphington?
And they go to Seraphington.
And then you wait on the seventh before they get back.
They don't explain the details there about whether or not you're doing any waiting or what.
So you think they go to Seraphington first, though?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's clear in other places when you study it. I mean, they definitely go to Seraphington, and then they pick up with you. But...
Because you're pretty good buddies by then, I would imagine.
Right. You know, but it's a reminder that you aren't so joined at the hip forevermore, really, once you leave Uversa. You know, the real, you know, direct parallel ends at the super universe headquarters. After that, it can be quite parallel or not really parallel at all. Okay, you may never, you know, be directly, you know, accompanied in the fashion you have been up to Uversa, after Uversa. You know, your Destiny Guardians may take a totally different path. You may occasionally touch bases, but you may not.
They do say you're tough.
They may not follow you through Havona. They may not join you on Paradise. I mean, you know, they're
after
Or as a finaliter or anything. Okay, that you'll keep tabs on each other. We were picking up in your head, like you said, we're gonna read this in a second if we just read. Okay. Basically all they're trying to tell you is everything you can think of happens in some percentage. I mean, there's just a zillion different paths. Okay, nothing is simplistically fixed here. And the fact that most of it is not about that really parallel path of them following you, you know, everywhere from here to eternity, is what they say there at the end. The majority of evolutionary seraphim pass through just Seraphington instead of the Havona circuits. So very, you know, the minority actually engage the Havona circuits.
Well, they say many.
Right.
But not all. That would sound like the majority of them.
No. Remember, there's two different men. Don't confuse this. Many of the Destiny Guardians follow you through Havona. But lots and lots of evolutionary seraphim are not Destiny Guardians. So you take all the evolutionary seraphim, and the majority of them don't go through Havona, even though the majority of the Destiny Guardians go through Havona. Okay, so in other words, the Destiny Guardians are not the majority of the evolutionary seraphim.
Really?
See, that's what you got to try to wrap your mind around.
I can't believe that. That'd be hard. there's a pair for every evolutionary, for the. No. It's got to be more mortal ascenders than there are angelic beings, wouldn't you think? Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole other question.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Remember how many. Just group categories of children of the infinite spirit are there, more than you can even imagine. Right. Got to remember that it's not all about you. All right.
Seraphington is the destiny sphere for angels, and their attainment of this world is quite different from the experiences of the mortal pilgrims on Ascendington. Angels are not absolutely sure of their eternal future until they have attained Seraphington. No angel attaining Seraphington has ever been known to go astray. Sin will never find response in the heart of a seraphim of completion.
Okay, so just a basic contrast there. You're going through Havona, and you visit your homeworld, Ascendington, to go on vacation. Okay? Seraphington is not their vacation world. That's their going through Havona, quote unquote. That's their work. Okay, see, that's what I was saying. It's quite different from the experiences. Okay, that's the basic contrast. Okay, you're not going to, ascending is not going to be a place for you where you're going through some long process of trying to achieve something. Okay, it's the place of rest for you. You know, it's your hometown. Okay. You go back there to just sit on the porch and kick back, okay? All right.
The graduates of Seraphington are variously assigned. Destiny guardians of Havona Circle experience usually enter the mortal finaliter core. Other guardians, having passed their Havona separation tests, frequently rejoin their mortal associates on paradise. And some become the everlasting associates of the mortal finaliters, while others enter the various non-mortal finaliter cores, and many are mustered into the core of seraphic completion.
Okay, so just so you don't get confused, you've got all these different evolutionary seraphim. They all go through Seraphington, and they are very variously assigned. But they don't give you any specificity about anything except the Destiny Guardians. Okay, everything after the colon there, see, is about just Destiny Guardians. They're not telling you about all the ones that weren't Destiny Guardians and what they're up to. The Destiny Guardians go through Havona, usually enter the Mortal Finaliter Core, but not definitely. Okay, so they could go all the way through with you and still go off on a tangent, right up to you becoming a finaliter, and then they, you do finaliter stuff, and they go off and do something totally different. But they usually join the finaliter core with you. If your destiny guardian doesn't follow you through Havona, they might rejoin you on Paradise and be one of the associates. They wouldn't be a mortal final, you know, part of the mortal final of the core, but they might be an associate of that core. Again, just some, see? So some of them, you know, again, just totally go off in a different direction. Some of them might go into the other non-mortal finality cores, and again, go off in a very different direction. or they might go into the core of seraphic completion and do very different things. Right? So you can see that just because they're your destiny guardian all the way here, joined at the hip to Uversa, doesn't mean they're going to be joined at the hip for eternity. There's a lot of different paths where they go off on a different track. All right, what about this core of seraphic completion here?
Number 9, the core of seraphic completion. After attainment of the Father of Spirits and admission to the seraphic service of completion, angels are sometimes assigned to the ministry of worlds settled in light and life. They gain attachment to the high trinitized beings of the universes and to the exalted services of Paradise and Havona. These seraphim of the local universes have experientially compensated the differential in divinity potential formerly setting them apart from the ministering spirits of the central and super universes. Angels of the seraphic core of completion serve as associates of the super universe Seconophim, and as assistants to the High Paradise Havona Orders of Supernophim. For such angels, the career of time is finished. Henceforth and forever, they are the servants of God, the consorts of divine personalities, and the peers of the Paradise Finaliters.
Okay, so, I mean, there's a whole bunch of, you know, they can do a lot of different things. You know, we don't, you know, you can remind yourself of the specifics there in the paragraph. But the key thing is, you know, we talked about this way back when we talked about Supernophim, Seconophim, and Seraphim. And that the big difference is Supernophim and Seconophim, you know, at birth are integrous. They're complete. Okay, but the seraphim aren't. Okay, in order for them to get so that they're like, you know, that their nature has that innate integrous character that their brethren, the Seconophim and Supernophim, have innately at birth, they have to get all the way through Seraphington and come out, you know, as a completion seraphim. Keep that, you know, just because they're a completion seraphim, you know, they've completed the seraphic circles, doesn't mean they're going to go into the core of seraphic completion. You know, they might follow you through Havona and end up in the mortal finality core, but, you know, they're a completion seraphim. Okay, see, so there's this distinction. You know, some of them, you know, have this, are definitively being used as completion seraphim, rather than their completion seraphim in some other mode, you know. But just that fact that their completion can be used in the same way that Seconophim are used as they are innately as Seconophim, and Supernophim are used innately as Supernophim. See, these are seraphim, completed seraphim, being used really as their full nature, which they don't have until they finally get to Seraphington. See, they're kind of this, parallel to an unfertilized egg sort of phenomenon, see, too, for a long time. I mean, there's a long time before they're actually as their brethren were to start with, okay, and really can do the full seraphim thing, okay? And the question is, do they just do that, or do they plug that into some other mode, you know, and use that in some other mode? But the core of seraphic completion is just being a seraphim in a complete fashion. All right, what else do they say here?
Large numbers of the completion seraphim return to their native universes. there to complement the ministry of divine endowment by the ministry of experiential perfection. Nebidon is, comparatively speaking, one of the younger universes and therefore does not have so many of these returned Seraphington graduates as would be found in an older realm. Nonetheless, our local universe is adequately supplied with the completion seraphim, for it is significant that the evolutionary realms disclose increasing need for their services as they near the status of light and life. Completion seraphim now serve more extensively with the supreme orders of seraphim, but some serve with each of the other angelic orders. Even your world enjoys the extensive ministry of 12 specialized groups of seraphic corps of completion.
Groups of the seraphic corps of completion.
Okay. These master seraphim of planetary supervision accompany each newly commissioned planetary prince to the inhabited worlds.
Okay, so two things. First of all, everything, you know, up to that last little bit. Remember, they told us about that before we started, going through all those categories of seraphim and all their subcategories, angels in the seraphic corps of completion were working with all of those groups. And we remember they mentioned that they work quite extensively with the supreme seraphim. So, you know, they're just repeating that here in the context to remind you of that, if you've forgotten that from the beginning of the paper. This is a long paper. There's that, and then, you know, this is the one spot where you can know this other little bit about the so-called, you know, master seraphim. It's not just in the case of like our planet where we have this special planetary government, you know, with a resident governor general, and we've got a veranda deck, you know, that's here as an observer, and, you know, all these different things, and those 12 different groups of, you know, master seraphim, that it's not just because of that, you know, because of Michael coming here and setting up this special planetary government that we have those completion seraphim here. You know, every planetary prince shows up on our world. See, there were master seraphim here 500,000 years ago. Okay, and, you know, you're left to basically assume they probably have been here all along through rebellion and default. And, you know, we don't know how many groups of them, you know, there normally are. You know, it may be a special thing that now we have 12, you know, and it basically tells you that when you go up and read about them, that on your rancha you have 12 groups. You know, so that's probably not typical. But, you know, you can say, well, maybe there were 10 groups. Maybe you had a group of master seraphim for each of the 10 groups of the planetary prince's staff. That would be a speculation you could make. Maybe there were 12, you know, groups of them, or, but whatever, you know, that is easily forgotten because it's just right here that you have this little, you know, little reminder that it isn't something that just happens way on. These full-on seraphim and what they can do are involved in the developing of a world right from the beginning, basically as soon as you have creatures of will dignity, unless you got a world, oddball world like us, you know, where we had 500,000 years before you had the planetary prince. But once you have, you know, humans that have significant ability to consciousize wisdom, these master seraphim are there trying to foster that wisdom towards light and life and beyond. Okay, so that's it's hard to remember that, you know, that in the midst of all that chaos with the Caligastia rebellion, that there were master seraphim there, and they didn't join the rebellion. And what were they doing? And, you know, going forward, how are they helping the Melchizedeks, if you assume that they continued on? So, anyway, that's a fun little tidbit there. Let's see, anything else in there? You know, they mentioned before, too, that, you know, we don't have a lot of completion seraphim here because we're relatively young. Returned completion seraphim. Yeah,
probably have enough though.
But
from other places.
Yeah, like they said, I mean, you always have as many as you need. But
so this is another thing about how long it takes for them to, you know,
right. Right.
100 billion years.
Yeah, like we said, there's spots like that where you get little hints about how long it takes to get someone there and back again. Pardon the Lord of the Rings reference there. it's hard to picture the seraphim as hobbits. Cherubim, maybe, but you can see they're just kind of sweeping through things. We still, you know, don't really have much of a sense of exactly what they're doing. You know, they tell you they're like helping Trinitized, sons, and it's like, well, doing what? I mean, you know, if we really can't even imagine what the regular seraphim, within the local universe seraphim are doing in all those categories we just read. You know, if it's basically beyond our imagination, how far beyond our imagination is it what the completion seraphim are doing? Here you are, you're hoping you're going to finally get some specifics and there aren't any. So, and then there's that reminder about the master seraphim. So, you know, when you read about the master seraphim, there's a lot of people get all excited. It's like, oh, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what all the master seraphim are doing, and we could probably even really get specific and try to help them with specific things that I know they're doing. How valid a thought is that? Even when it comes to angels of trumpets and things like that, the angels of the churches, and you go, I'm pretty sure I know what those angels of the churches are up to. No, you don't. Okay, that's not possible. You can't even imagine what angels that are incredibly benighted relative to them are up to, let alone an angel that's gone through the seven circles on Seraphington and beyond, and they're up to things that are of a very high nature that's beyond our imagination, okay? But the amazing thing is, there's 12 categories of Master Seraphim, and they have titles anyway that are words that you can recognize, okay? So there is a mystery there that despite the fact that their specific doings are beyond our imagination, somehow that does impact lowly things that you think you know something about, like nation life or whatever, family life, things like that. But just to appreciate, it's still going to be the case, just like with all the non-completion seraphim, that their doings are really above mind. They're doing things at a very high level that subtly filters down into relationship with our mind and subtly over long spans of time guides that, kind of random process as we see it forward. You know, it establishes a drift in the chaos that is, our animal origin nature bouncing around like pinballs. Okay, they put a drift in that, and you can trust that no matter how sideways things seem to be going today. If you could look at it from their perspective, you would see that it inexorably is moving towards light and life. You can trust that. Act today as if you can see that. You referred to that, indirectly earlier. That you're supposed to live today as if you can see that inexorable flow that never goes, one step forward, two steps back. It's monotonic. It always moves forward, okay? No matter how chaotic it gets, it's always moving forward. Live your life along that line, not at right angles to it. Find that line that ever moves forward and follow it. Don't follow the other voices that take you lateral to that, okay, and into despair, that no, that we're going to hell in a handbasket. You know, find that line that's sure, and set your life, you know, with it.
Yeah. So two things that come up in this very last sentence about, you know, accompanying a planetary prince. Well, first of all, these seraphim are, you know, rebellion proof. You know, they've gotten mm-hmm. far, and they. So first thing it made me think of, well, they're kind of like finaliters in a way, but as seraphim, so right. they're kind of, maybe they're doing things with finaliters that, as you mentioned a minute ago, are way right. beyond what we could contemplate.
Right.
For the and but the other thing is it didn't seem like they did a whole lot to influence the planetary prince.
It's almost like the planetary prince has free will. And right. I mean, yeah, again, you know,
free will, we think that,
yeah, you know, we think, well, you can't be too hard on Caligash. Yeah, I mean, he was thrown in this goofy world, and, you know, and he went astray. It's like, no, he has everything he could ever need, even though he doesn't have an adjuster. He still has everything in spades that he could ever need to not go astray. Okay? And he still went astray. See, the same is true when you're on the mansion world. You have, you know, 50 times more help than you could ever use. You know, and not going astray, but still, you know, you can stop your ears. There's none so blind as those who will not see. See, that's the thing you got to remember. We're not talking about just not seeing with your mind. We're talking about bringing in personality and its absoluteness that trumps anything, trumps completion seraphim. If you will not see, then no one can help you, not even the absolute Father. So that's, you know, you can't pretend that that's not the case. Your free will is genuine. Caligasta can ignore all of those master seraphim, okay? You know, and he can even justify it by saying, well, actually, they didn't go to Seraphington. There isn't a Seraphington. And, you know, he can come up with some conspiracy theory or whatever. But, you know, you can do the same thing. You're on the first mansion world, and there's celestial beings as far as the eye can see in every direction. Okay, and you can see them, you don't have to just believe in them, and you can say, no, I like me better than you, okay, and you can do that. All right.
Many fascinating avenues of ministry are open to the completion seraphim, but just as they all craved assignment as destiny guardians in the pre-paradise days, so, in the post-paradise experience, they most desire to serve as bestowal attendants of the incarnated paradise sons. They are still supremely devoted to the universal plan of starting the mortal creatures of the evolutionary worlds out upon the long and enticing journey towards the paradise goal of divinity and eternity. Throughout the whole mortal adventure of finding God and of achieving divine perfection, these spirit ministers of seraphic completion, together with the faithful ministering spirits of time, are always and forever your true friends and unfailing helpers. Presented by a Melchizedek acting by request of the chief of seraphic hosts of Nebadon.
In other words, the same one as wrote the previous paper.
I
mean, the Melchizedek, see, that wrote this paper. I mean, remember the byline was the same in the previous paper. So it's obviously, one Melchizedek wrote these two papers, the same one that was requested by the chief of seraphic hosts of Nebadon. Okay, I mean, obviously that's they wanted to end with a poetic flourish. And they reminded you of what we read way back about the bestowal attendants. Remember, that was one of the main things or roles that they gave you some details about that the completion seraphim were up to, and that was their most desired service mode. This whole issue, again of. We were just talking about of choosing iniquity in spite of all the help. You notice that's, even though it's a poetic positive flourish between the lines, see, you know, they are always and forever your true friends and unfailing helpers. I mean, it's impossible to fail if you use the help. Okay? You know, so there's nothing to, you know, to doubt or fear about your destiny. You know, you should be able to think about the facts and not be afraid. You know, it's like, well, I don't want to allow people to go to iniquity in the first mansion world because that's scary. Okay? Because that means I might. No, all of the helpers are unfailing. Okay? You know, it's guaranteed that you'll get there unless you absolutely choose not to. It's impossible to not get there, no matter how ignorant and hopeless you are, if you desire to get there. The only way not to get there is if you absolutely desire not to. And the universe honors your free will. Like, okay, you absolutely desire to not get there, your wish is granted. Okay? They respect free will no matter what path it takes. And it's important to not just read this and feel this with your animal mind, you know, that's predicated on that fear, like we said up at the front, but to also hear it with your personal mind. It's predicated on courage. And is not, you know, has the courage to wake up on a first mansion world, the real first mansion world, that has those that are going to choose iniquity. Or even to strive through all seven of those mansion worlds and become a Gerasim citizen and be standing next to someone who's going to end up going squirrely on some world like Nod and crew did. There's nothing to be afraid of if you start with courage. Okay, but there's everything to be afraid of if you start with fear. You have to choose to not read the revelation as your animal origin self. It's based on fear. You know, and that's especially true when you get to passages that are rugged truths. You'll just go catatonic with fear if you allow yourself to actually hear what they say in some places in the book. If you're not starting with courage, okay, some of the truths are very rugged. They just lay waste to your fondest hopes and dreams of bliss. Okay? And so you need that courage. You got to start with that courage. Find that courage. And then read the revelation anew. Face its facts, you know, and adjust them to ideals and achieve the wisdom that the revelators, you know, are hoping that you achieve. All right, let's take a moment here.